As a boy, Peter had always known the smells of his home: wood smoke and cabbage, pipe tobacco, the occasional perfume his mother wore on nights at party functions, and gunpowder, the scent of power, the scent of authority. His father never missed when they hunted near the dacha he'd been given as a reward for obedience, drive, and the ability to find crime where there was none. Despite their family's position in the party, the stewpot was too Russian to be forgotten as a source of food and family and the grim national pastime that lurked outside every home. The stewpot was a subtle wink toward a true Russian's constant companion, death. Peter hunted with his father now, but not in the birch forests of his childhood. They were more than 2,000 kilometers away in a Soviet Union that creaked like a storm-racked tree, lunging forward to a death that seemed inevitable and unknown. Again, death, always at the door, or peeping fretfully through the memory of family tales from before the October Revolution, when the White Army had held bitterly to a life that was rotting from the head down. Now, Peter and his papa stalked the forest in Poland, a vassal state that was no longer cowed by the tanks and bribes and promises of a global Soviet. "Who is the enemy after all?" Peter thought, his teenaged mind sharp and curious. He knew his papa was not a good man. When the party told his father to go to Poland and correct a local trade board for corruption and democratic thoughts, there had been no question, only obedience. Then the family spent 2 days on a wheezing train as they moved inexorably west to the place where names changed. The food was almost the same, and hatred of his father, and by extension Peter, ran deeper than the swift spring floods. Peter had watched, impassively, as the Polish family of means was moved from their house, Peter's house now, by force, their daughter staring at Peter with hollow, accusatory eyes, as a Cheka agent cuffed her across the face. For good measure, you see, there must be obedience. There must be fear. There must always be the specter of death. After all, they were Russians. And now here they were, hunting as usual, whiling away an afternoon for pleasure, not survival, their very movements almost lazy. They were, like all party members, well-fed. They could afford leisure.
"Papa, a bouncer?" Peter whispered,
using a word from their odd little family language. His father knew he meant hair. The Grishenko family, long servants of the elite, had a language of code words, both spoken and written, accumulated over decades. When you lived and died by secrets, as all agents of the state understood, a childlike family code could mean the difference between survival or torture. The Grishenko family took their secrets seriously, to the point that they had a private family language known only to them. It was no surprise that the Grishenkos made excellent spies. Papa looked around, then cocked his head in the pose of a natural hunter. He saw no hare. He did, however, hear something, and lifted his head to sniff the wind with a feral echo of his wild youth. Papa gave Peter a nod of thanks.
"A bouncer indeed. You've young ears, son."
Peter's father never heard the bullet that killed him. In truth, it was no bullet, and it was fired by no man. The sizzling round of energy splattered Alexei Petrovich Grishenko's skull like it was an overripe fruit, hollowing his brain pan out in a flash of heat and light that scalded Peter's eyes, leaving him blinded, howling, and terrified. The wet thump of Papa's body was followed by nothing. When his eyes cleared, a being, not a man, stood staring down at him, 2 meters of arrogant indifference, a rifle cocked lazily on one hip. The uniform was black, with no name or rank visible. Looking up, paralyzed with fear, Peter saw no ordinary person. The face was too narrow and predatory. The creature's skin was a dull gray with streaks of icy blue, hair cropped short under goggles that gave off soft green light. Blinking slowly, the being extended a hand, its eyes flat black with red pupils that were wholly inhuman. When it spoke, the voice came from a small box, scuffed and raw from use in the field, on its shoulder.